Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a Dharma sister whose name is Dana Vilton, and I just found out recently that Dana had written a book called Finding Yourself in the Kitchen. So this is a shameless plug for Dana's book. I bought it. I really like it. It's filled with small little essays. She originally wrote them for a blog about just kind of living your life, working, but mostly revolving around being in the kitchen. You know, it's an everyday practice that we can all engage in. So I highly recommend the book. I felt like it was thoughtful, that it's wise, and it's joyous. It has a lot of joy in it. So it's a nice book. And then if you read the weekly quote this week, I quoted from this book and made a comment on what she said. So I wanted to keep talking about work practice this morning, using Dana's observation as a kind of foundation. So Dana starts out this little section. She says, this is called Soji, or How to Clean Everything. So Soji in a Japanese monastic schedule would be work practice. So she points out that, she says, in many Zen temples, there's an activity called Soji, a period of about 20 minutes where the whole community participates in cleaning up the temple and its grounds. So it usually happens after bowing and chanting service, marking the end of the morning meditation schedule. At San Francisco Zen Center, Soji happens then at City Center. It's first, there's a Zazen, then service, then Soji, and then after Soji, they have a breakfast that everybody can go to. At Dasahara in the monastery, it would be in the summer, it would be Soji would come the same sequence, but in the monastic environment, it would be something maybe after breakfast. So anyway, it's a short work practice. So in part of this essay that Dana wrote, she says, just pick up the broom and do the best job you possibly can sweeping the hall until it's time to stop. If the hall is only half swept, it doesn't matter. Just put away your tools and move on to the next thing. So she's talking about, Soji's usually timed. This is really hard for people when they first start doing Soji, because you're given a work assignment and then you have 20 minutes or so to finish it. And you're really engaged in it or whatever, and then somebody's walking around, they walk around with a little gong, hitting the gong, and you're supposed to stop. Like, right there, you stop, you put away your tools, you put them back in the closet or whatever. You stop. So that's very hard, because most of us are driven by a sense of an idea we have about when a task is done, based on our notion of when a task is done, and that doesn't include stopping. Like if somebody says, go clean that hallway. So at City Center, at San Francisco Zen Center in San Francisco, the hallway might be, I don't know, long. 20 yards?
Yards, no. Yards.
Anyway, 10 yards. It's a long hallway. So you're sweeping the hallway. And when you're sweeping the hallway, you're paying attention to the shoes, so you'll move the shoes and then you'll put them back where they're supposed to be, because everybody's shoes are in front of their door. And the idea is that you want to have somebody come back after they've eaten breakfast and not know the hall's been cleaned, not realize that their shoes have been moved. So you're paying attention to various things. So, you know, this is kind of like the bodhisattva vows that we take. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are endless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it. That's kind of like that kind of task. Like, how do you do this thing? So how do we, you know, enter every Dharma gate? Well, the only way we can enter every Dharma gate, that's a lifetime activity, right? And we enter those Dharma gates moment by moment. So the koan is for a Dharma gate would be like, well, how do I even see a Dharma gate? How do I even know how to go through the Dharma gate? So part of this activity of this work practice is helping us open our Dharma eye to see the Dharma gate. So maybe we're feeling all this resistance, you know. Oh, the gong rang and I'm not finished cleaning the hallway. I'm not finished with this task that I've decided is going to take a certain amount of time or involves a certain amount of doing this. So this is this practice of letting go. Just letting go of the task. Letting go of our ideas about it. What comes up for us when that happens? Usually resistance. So that's a Dharma gate. Then we are Dharma eyes a little more open because it's an environment where we can see, oh, I'm feeling resistance. So in some ways, doing Soji is a ritual. It has a practical side. In Zen, we don't usually do things unless there's a practical side. Even the most ritual of the activities that we're engaged in might be generating merit, which we would consider to be very practical. Generate merit, give the merit away. That's the bodhisattva's acts that we engage in. So usually what we're doing, there is some purpose to what we're doing, even though we can't see what it is. And we like to make it a very mundane activity. But actually, there's usually a lot going on than what we think might be going on. So this, how we pay attention in Zen is a particular way of paying attention, which I'll say something about in a minute. So, for example, another piece of this would be when Dana says, just put away your tools. So how we relate to objects in Zen is really important. That's a deep part of the practice. So putting away the tools might be if you're sweeping, you're putting away the broom. So how do you put away the broom? I've been to Zen temples where everything is labeled. Like, you'll go and... I'd forgotten about this, but I'll tell this story. Chuck and I went to the Toronto Zen Center, which was mainly populated by young men, very, very vigorous guys. And it was, we were asked to clean the kitchen during Soji, to mop the floor during Soji. But they brought out not toothbrushes, but little tiny brushes for us to clean the floor. This is very Zen. So that was fine. We just cleaned the floor with these little brushes because that was what we were asked to do. So we cleaned the floor with the little brushes. Our preferences, you know, our ideas about what might have been the most efficient way to clean the floor really wasn't an issue here. They could have brought us toothbrushes and we would have cleaned the floor with toothbrushes. Because they had a lot of students coming in and out on their work days and things, everything was labeled. So sometimes you'll go to a Zen temple and be like, you know, two-handled pot, and then there'll be an outline about where the pot goes so you know exactly where to put the pot back, or there'll be very detailed instructions in the bathroom as to how to clean the bathroom. But in general, taking care of tools is kind of a way of paying attention to what you're doing. So, for example, if you're using a broom, you would store the broom with the bristles up. You wouldn't store it with the bristles down, because if you just put it back in the closet with the bristles down, the gravity causes the bristles to bend. So then the broom can't do its function after a while because it's been sitting on that kind of, on those bristles, and so they start to collapse. So you would store the broom with the handle going down and the bristles going up. Or you would store the broom on a hook so that the bristles weren't sitting on the ground. So there's this way that, this very practical way that you're paying attention to the tools that you're using in it's a way of respecting those tools. It's a way of seeing the virtue of that object in and of itself for itself. We don't know what a broom thinks about, right? We don't know what it is to be a broom. But a broom for us, we do have this reciprocal function that we do with a broom. And so it behooves us to take care of that tool and to honor it by taking care of it and by giving it its own life, by allowing it to function with us the best way that it can as we can function with it. So this is part of work practice, is how we relate to tools. Another thing that you would do, for example, would be when you use a knife, you would always use the knife, wash the knife, dry the knife, and hang up the knife. Not use the knife, put the knife in with all the dirty dishes, and then sort of rinse it off and put it in the dish drainer. So there's this way of how you take care of a knife, right? Keep a knife sharp. If you don't keep a knife sharp, then it's dull. And not only is it not able to fulfill its function, but also it's quite dangerous for us to use a dull knife because they slip and we have to push harder, and it just makes our life much harder. I'll tell you a story on me, though. I used to work in the kitchen at Tassajara, and Jocko was Tenzo at City Center. I was Tenzo, head cook at Tassajara. And so I had inculcated this into my body. But when we moved here to Santa Cruz, for some reason, I got in the habit of doing exactly what I just said one shouldn't do, which is rinsing off the knives and putting them in the dish drainer. And the knife blade, over time, developed this tiny little half circle in it. And I couldn't figure out what was causing that half circle. Well, it turned out that what caused the half circle was that the blade was sitting on the dish drainer, right? And I guess probably the kind of salt air or whatever around here was eroding the... So when I figured out what was going on, then all of a sudden this whole other trail, in mental trail for me of, oh, that's not the practice of how to work with a knife. Somehow I got amnesia about that. So it reminded me, okay, use the knife, wash the knife, you know, dry the knife, and now we keep them on magnetic strips, right? Put the knife back on the magnetic strip on the wall. So this the knife was that Dharma gate. The knife was, hey, something's going on here. I'm not being taken care of. Wake up, Shinshu. Wake up. Don't do this. Don't put me, my blade down on the dish drainer. That doesn't work for me. So that little Dharma gate, I went, oh, took me a while. Oh, what's up with this? So the things, the objects that we relate to tell us something, right? They're a Dharma gate. They're a way to talk to us about the nature of our experience. And then at another point here, Dana says, she just mentions the time. She says about 20 minutes when the whole community participates in cleaning. So I wanted to talk about a little bit about what is it? Exactly what is it that we're doing in work practice? So I wrote a little bit about this in my book on Uji. And so I thought I'd read this to you. So this is about mindfulness. We have this whole culture now in the United States about mindfulness. And do you remember that movie, The Karate Kid? Mm-hmm. And remember he would go like, wax on, wax off, right? That whole thing that he did that was went on endlessly in that movie that was so inspiring in many ways, right? This incredible resistance to this work practice that he considered to be... why? You know, why? I hadn't meant to talk about this, but this reminds me of something. One of the things that happens during Soji is at San Francisco Zen Center is that you go down to the Zendo and you clean the Zendo, and you might think that the Zendo is clean. So people say, well, why am I down here cleaning the Zendo? The Zendo is already clean. But it doesn't matter that the Zendo is already clean because you were asked to go down and clean the Zendo. So really, here's another example. Just let it go and go clean the Zendo. So that's kind of like this wax on, wax off thing that he was teaching him, right? Is this way of taking care of that that maybe you don't know exactly what's going on. Maybe it's about this reciprocity that's happening. So anyway, I wrote in my book, in the United States, we often hear about mindfulness associated with Buddhism. This popular notion of mindfulness is defined as a kind of complete attention on the activity and its object. For instance, as we are washing dishes, we might be saying to ourselves, I am washing a plate, and focusing on our attention on the activity of washing. So that would kind of be a popularized notion of mindfulness. We might slow down, follow our breath, and put all our attention on the sensation of the task as an object of our attention. So then I say, this would not be how Dogen would advise approaching the activity of deep investigation or exhaustive penetration. So this is actually not how we do practice in a Zen temple around work. It is not an activity of a subject-object relationship between us and the tools that we're using. Then I wrote, he might describe the activity of washing dishes as washing, washes, washing. So washes, washes, washing takes the subject-object aspect out of this, and it turns the activity itself into an activity of without the self, an activity of something that is more inclusive than our sense of self. So that goes back to what I was talking about earlier about how we do practice, about not having the agenda of what we think we are going to be accomplishing during a time period, or how we think we're going to be accomplishing this in this kind of broad way that's an attachment to our own agenda. Now again, this isn't to say that I'm not saying that we shouldn't have tasks in which we say to ourselves, oh, I'm going to go clean the bathroom, right? I'm going to clean the bathroom this afternoon, and I'm going to stay in there until the bathroom is clean. I'm not saying that you shouldn't do an activity that way. But in this more formalized way of doing soji, where we're talking about using it as a practice to teach us something about our self, our attachment to self. So back to this, mindfulness may be a dharma gate to intimacy, but it is not the Zen practice of exhaustively penetrating the totality of one's experience. When engaging in work practice, a Soto Zen student is interacting with the totality of all the elements arising within the context of that activity. This means one makes effort to fulfill the task in such a way that one is respectful of the tools used, the context of the work, so that would be the context of soji in this case, is this little short period, the instructions of the work leader, so the person who's in, Randy's our work leader, so how the work leader asked us to do it. So for example, if you're cutting carrots in the kitchen, the tenzo or the fukuten, who's the tenzo's assistant, may say, I want you to roll cut the carrots, which means that you kind of roll and cut and you end up with a sort of triangular shaped carrot, or you might be cutting it in discs. So there's many ways, or you might dice in a carrot. So you're actually following instructions. You're not saying to yourself, well, you know, I really like this other kind of carrot, so I think I'll cut the carrot that way, because that's the best way. So we drop that and we just do what we're being asked to do. We do the time allotted for the task and working in unison with others. When we are able to engage and work this way, we drop our own agenda and fully engage with the complete activity of cleaning and community. So the community part is important here, is that we're working as a group. So for example, when we have a work practice day here, our even setting up the zendo for lecture, that's soji, setting up the zendo for lecture, any of these kind of activities that we engage in where we're working together. So in this way, we're helping each other. We're, you know, somebody who's new and you see them standing there and they clearly don't know what to do, you help them. You know, you say, oh, you could do this. You think to yourself, what would be simple that this person could do? Like, we wouldn't ask them to pick up this altar because we know that it's not attached, right? So you know that might potentially be something that would be fraught with problems. Like, they might knock the whole thing over, and that wouldn't be a very welcoming thing to ask somebody to do. Now, you might say to yourself, well, why don't you attach the... Well, that's another story. Anyway, so you think of something that person can do that would be very simple. Oh, please, take some chairs out from the back. They go along the wall here. So this way that we... It's not just about getting the job done, but it's about getting the job done with each other. It's about getting the job done in this kind of harmonious context of working with each other. But it's also about getting the job done. So in Zen, we're not thinking, I am picking up the chair, I am moving the chair, I am breathing, I am walking, I am setting the chair down. Although Suzuki Roshi did say one time, at San Francisco Zen Center, the city center, the dining room is right above the Zendo. And they have wooden chairs with little metal, you know, pads on the bottom of them. And people would take the chairs and drag them across the floor or pull them out. And sitting in the Zendo, it's like, you know, this amazing noise. So he said, please pick up the chairs. So... we want to, you know, that also is a way of being respectful of the chairs. If you're dragging chairs around, it's not good for the chairs to be dragged around. So it's always nice to be, we like quiet in Zen, right? We like picking up, putting down, that kind of activity. So that's a way of being in harmony, right? Being in harmony and being aware of not just kind of getting something done, but getting it done in the context of the totality of what's going on. So if you're in the dining room above the Zendo and you know that Zazen's happening below you, then part of that is being aware of the fact that there are people below you. If you're in the Zendo and you hear people upstairs, part of your job is to acknowledge and understand that this other thing needs to happen, not sit there and go, boy, I really hate them. They're so horrible upstairs, they're making so much noise, and I can't have my spiritual experience. Right? So it's like, that's part of that. We're not separate from each other. The people in the Zendo and the people in the dining room are not separate from each other. So, next door, when Sherry and those guys are having their activities, they are not separate from us, and I mean that in the best way. Sometimes we feel like they're right here in the room with us, and that can be somewhat distracting. And yet, they have their activity, and we share the space with each other. So they try to be respectful of us, and we are open to their activity. I don't want them to be over there feeling like they have to tiptoe around and never laugh and never have any fun, because we're sitting Zazen here. You know. So there's this way that this reciprocity. So it's not a mindfulness activity in the sense that we popularly think of it. Another little story I was going to tell is, there's a story, maybe it's apocryphal, but there's these stories about Americans going to Zen monasteries and doing soji outside, raking leaves and things. And America will always try to move away from the group, right? There'll always be, and the group will be following them. So it's like they're the Westerners, like, you know, kind of sweeping off into the distance, and all the Japanese monks are all like moving along with them, right? So there's this real awareness of this mandala of activity, that we are all engaged in this activity together. We have this awareness of each other. Then Dana says, doing the best job you possibly can, sweeping the hallway, and then moving on to the next thing. So again, how do we assess what needs to be done, do the best job that we can do, and then let go of it? So we have this kind of koan in Zen. We say, make your best effort and have no gaining idea. So you're being asked to wholeheartedly throw yourself into the activity and simultaneously have no gaining idea. So that's really hard to do. That's really, especially in a complex task. When I was the financial officer at San Francisco Zen Center, that was kind of my mantra. I'm like, how do I make my best effort? Because we're talking about, this is important, we're talking about money and things like this. How do I make my best effort to make decisions with the group and then let go of it? How can I trust the group? Even Soji is a certain level about trust. We have some notion about what needs to be clean, but trust that others, if it needs to happen, other people will do it. That the work leader will notice that something else needs to happen. And so the next morning, somebody else will come and clean the other half of the hallway. The work leader will say, clean that half. Don't clean this half. So this way that we trust, we can't see it, but we have to have a certain level of trust in the whole group wisdom about it. And then finally, and this is what I talked about in my weekly quote, Dana talks about, she says, another thing that Soji teaches us is how to get tasks done even when we don't feel like doing them. The custom for Soji is to receive and accept your work assignment without comment. It doesn't matter if you don't feel like drying the dishes or if you hate the smell of window cleaner or if you actually love turning the compost for that matter. You just do what is assigned to you in silence, because usually traditionally work practice is silent. In silence and ideally with no preference, or if you do have a preference, you learn to ignore it. So, there are times when ignoring our feelings is not a good idea. But I think what she's trying to convey here is that we are aware of our resistances, but we also understand that there's a Dharma gate there. We know that the activity we're engaged in is a harmless activity. Cleaning is a harmless activity, and yet it's amazing how many preferences we have around doing it. And have you ever done work assignments like this where you're standing in a big circle and the work leader's going around, you're thinking to yourself, please don't ask me this, please don't ask me this, I don't want to ask this, I did the toilets last week, I don't want to do them this week. So you can feel all this, arising coming up. And then the work leader says, would you do the toilets? And you say, oh, yes, of course, thank you, like that. And then you go off and you do the toilets and you have whatever feelings you have around that. But I will note that when we can kind of cope with the feelings that we have and let them go, we can really enter into that Dharma gate. We alleviate our own suffering because negativity is a kind of suffering. We alleviate the suffering of others because other people pick up on it. And so that's a very good thing. That's a very bodhisattva path. And we remember that we're part of a group. This is this group practice where we all have to pitch in and do these various things. And then if we can let go of this, then we can really just be spaciously engaged in this activity of toilet, cleaning toilet. Work, working, work. Dishes, washing. Washes, washes, washes. So we can just be part of that, which is a kind of wonderful feeling of this harmony and engagement and a kind of joyous energy in accomplishing this thing, in this particular way. So I think all of that and probably a lot more is in what Dana wrote about. And in all the kinds of things that she does, mostly it is more about cooking and things like that. And so I really recommend the book. So thank you very much.